I mean, yeah, I find it interesting because, again, when I said it first looks really odd, but then as you get closer, you start to realize how interesting it is as a training tool. Mm-hmm. In a similar way to Chisao, where you're like, how did somebody come up with this?
Yeah.
Like, how did somebody come up with this way of, I mean, a lot of Chisao seems kind of like, well, let's save time. Let's, instead of stepping back, coming forward, and also that's working on something different, but how do we just work on this series of micro skills where we're already engaged in here, where we've got this tool where we can already keep practicing something in a specialized kind of context using this tool.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know the history of the evolution of how the mukjong came in. I mean, other Chinese martial arts do have a wooden mat.
Mm-hmm.
So this didn't start with Wing Chun,
mm-hmm.
right? I think it was more popularized or maybe more streamlined in our art. But obviously different styles were using this. And, you know, my understanding from my own experience, not from any stories, but my own understanding, my own intuitive understanding is, and you know, I've heard my Sifu say this a couple of times too, is like, I don't have a training partner. So somebody decided to build one of these things to practice on.
Yeah.
You know, it could be something is that simple, and then it evolves from that to like, oh, maybe we should add another arm, or, well, let me make a series of forms instead of me just punching the thing and.
Yeah.
So where we are now is it's more complex, dynamic, intentional sort of thing. Whereas before it could have been old school punching bag, but it's made out of wood.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if any of that's true. And I think that's the beauty of a lot of these arts is, you know, these things aren't sort of like algebraic formulas that are objectively true. They're their story, their myth, and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess coming from Silam Tao and Chum Q, in a certain sense, teach us our ideal game in a certain way. Or this is one way I've heard it
yeah.
spoken of. And Buji, the third form, teaches us something non-ideal, something that's gone wrong, or the emergency hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, with the mukjong, where it follows that sort of progression, how do you view that? Are there elements of all of those different ideal form plus emergency forms, emergency hands still mm-hmm. there?
I think for me, like if I was to say there's a progression, I would have put Buji after the mukjong.
Okay.
Because the mukjong is still in this non-compromised, idealized state of Wing Chun.
Okay.
So I can make up another story as to why that might be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people didn't have a lot of time. Maybe they, you know, had a certain amount of time and they needed to get to, hey, what's the 911 of this stuff, and mm-hmm. the mukjong maybe some other time, but I just need this basic fighting stuff, and
mm-hmm.
if this doesn't work, you know, tell me about the elbows and all this other stuff. Like,
yeah.
You know, so that's the thing is, like, especially the older I get and the more exposure I get, and my trip to China a few months ago where it really sort of highlighted this is, Wing Chun is so vast in its understanding, stories, mythology, interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm continuously humbled about my own ego that wants to, you know, funnel it down to how I understand and how it's been taught. I still think it's better. But when I'm actually looking at the truth of, you know, like all the clubs that came out of China and the stuff they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where Ip Man learned it. It was in China. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was around before Ip Man was. So does that mean it all gets discounted because he was some wonderful prophet who took it to the next level and everything? Like, so all that stuff gets pretty messy, right?
Yeah.
So related to your question, I mean, the simple answer is, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why they made it the fourth form. Maybe other schools, it's their third. I mean, when I first came to train here in Victoria with one of the Sifus at the YMCA and him not knowing my background,
mm-hmm.
I was a new person, and we're doing Chisao in the first class, and we're doing movements from the mukjong. Is he wrong? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the best way, the most efficient way to teach the most amount of students? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to look at, you know, like yeah, there's a lot of diversity out there. Around the specifics of the curriculum and then how it's actually taught in what order. I mean, we have a standard, we think it's wonderful, and So, like I said, the real answer, I don't know, but if I was to, you know, reorganize the universe, I would probably have put Yu Qi after the Mahjong.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I don't see anything from Yu Qi other than the Hunmas.
Okay.
That are relevant for what's going on in the Mokyanjong form.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know if we want to talk about this form section by section, because there are, I guess, 8 sections.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's something you would want to...
You know, I don't think it's... for this type of conversation and for its purpose, I don't think going through every little
okay.
piece or section,
yeah.
Because each of them are going to have that same essence
yeah.
around distancing.
Yeah.
Around fan sao and hand replacement and changing and dynamic footwork. And there's just all kinds of different series of movements that help you focus that. I mean, there's new techniques or new applications that are introduced that we don't typically show or use or talk about in the earlier stages. But, yeah. I mean, if there's specific things that you've seen, I mean, I'm happy to answer those.
I don't know, but I was... So thinking about it as the solid, immovable object,
yeah.
I guess I would wonder, how does that... So not going section, not a specific thing, but again, returning to the general sense.
Mm-hmm.
How does that help one become more... Does that become help one become more integrated? Because you've spoken about the form being a more integrated form,
mm-hmm.
but is that in part, does that have something to do with the Mahjong as the solid immovable?
Yeah, because the depth of integration occurs that when I can't go ta-da, I
yeah.
won, I'm in,
yeah.
it's like, oh, I got stopped, I got to change. Oh,
yeah.
I got stopped, I got to change. It brings that person's ability to keep movement after being stopped or thwarted.
Okay.
Especially for people like me, who are big, and
okay.
don't oftentimes get stopped
okay.
or thwarted,
right.
right? So
yeah.
the Mahjong is really awesome tool for me to practice that essence of it,
right.
because very few people can move me. Like I can take the center line without using brute force, just because of my size, skill, and technique,
yeah,
and structure. Like I have so many advantages,
yeah,
right. So it's a rare person who can shut me down, and if I don't train. On contact when I feel hard, instead of I'm gonna go harder.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't train to like, oh, I gotta change right away, like
yeah.
without
yeah.
even like probing too much, it's like right on contact, learn how to do that. Because there will always be someone bigger, stronger, who will give you this rigid energy,
mm-hmm.
and the moment you feel it, if you don't train how to actually
yeah.
quickly let go and readapt,
yeah.
you're gonna get trapped in that lock up, oh, I have to fight them, and then I get tense, and then
mm-hmm.
I have no kung fu.
Yeah.
Literally trapped in my own resistance of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I don't train a habit of letting go right away and surrendering and just changing the line,
yeah.
or if I come in and to literally allow the Mahjong to bounce me back out
mm-hmm.
to the appropriate new line, like that's for me one of the other beautiful things, is that when I fully commit to the step, even though I know I can't walk through it, if I have good structure and I keep my weight back as I step in, I feel a reverb that bounces me out, which actually creates energy for me to step and change, and then it takes less energy and work for me to actually step. Because
okay.
I'm using the energy of the bounce to then just flow around it. So for me, that's also a nice essence that the Mahjong teaches you.
It's saving energy.
Saving energy,
yeah.
but if I just go in and
yeah.
then I'm hard and stick, as
yeah.
opposed to just come in and let it bounce off, and that bounce is like, all right, oh, there's the new line.
And there's that non-attachment too. That's
yeah, you don't care.
Here. Yeah,
you don't care. You're just
like
I'm gonna get there eventually, right?
Yeah.
So as long as you're patient and trust, you don't care.
Yeah. So it seems like there's obviously there's a benefit to it for everybody, but it seems again it brings us back to that again the mythology, but the Wing Chun was developed by a smaller person, that the Mahjong would have such a benefit for somebody who's can't use muscle.
Exactly.
They encounter. Anybody could use muscle against them if you're smaller. So
yeah.
you can't unmuscle the the dummy, obviously.
Not unless you have an axe. And even then, it'll take a few swings.
Okay. Yeah. And that it's interesting to think about also responding to something that at first glance doesn't seem responsive. Mm-hmm. It's a piece of wood, but you're talking about bouncing off it and using that kind of energy or absorbing that and using that, redirecting your energy from that.
Bad metaphor, but you can think about, you know, the path in life. Like sometimes the path in life is found by stumbling in the dark against the two walls.
Yeah.
Right? It's maybe not the most elegant way to find the path, but you're still in the path as long as you've got some regulators in there, right? And the Mokjong gives you that.
Yeah.
It tells you exactly where the no's are.
Yeah.
It says, don't come here. And it's like, hey, it changed. And then it says, yeah, and you can't come here either. And so you're just constantly training.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, there are some techniques that you get to fully release, you know, it would be a strike. But others are like, no, I got blocked. Or, you know, when you're coming down the Gansa, I was like, no, I got to change.
Yeah. And I wonder also, I think there's three things here, but I've forgotten what the third one is. But when we come in with a technique, and especially if we've trapped the person's hands and they've got the several choices they can make, they can leave, mm-hmm. in which case we just step in, continue in.
Yeah.
They can become stiff or hard or try to fight it, in which case you've got kind of a dummy snapshot there. And I think it was a third one, which I can't remember, but it seems like that. There's like mini dummies that sort of emerge while you're training or fighting.
No, it's very, very consistent with, you know, the things we've said before, right? I mean, in terms of the Wing Chun fight philosophy.
Yeah.
You go to center line, I mean, someone will try and move you, and then you just hand replace.
Yeah.
Or they leave, and then you hit them, or they fight you, and then you change.
Right.
I mean, really, that's the simplicity of the art.
Yeah.
Is the fight philosophy comes down to basically three scenarios of which we overtrain ridiculously. But like, you know, the art of war is like you have to make sure that you're only going into those battles that will allow you that.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why we don't initiate. That's why we don't go looking for trouble. That's why we draw that person to have to come to us.
Yeah.
And then we got them. And it's like, okay, now we're playing on my board.
Yeah.
Right? So philosophically, we have to make sure that, you know, we're living our life that way too.
Yeah.